the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, where we discuss all things crypto-related. Your host, Kieran Ryan.
It would be wrong to say the South African crypto market is maturing. It's still in its teenage years, but it's nothing like it was 3 or 4 years ago. We know this because we now have much better data on the size and the transaction level within the crypto community. Now, what was once a Wild West, we're now seeing tighter compliance at local exchanges, more demand for transaction monitoring, and there's growing pressure from South African revenue services. At the same time, stablecoins have become a practical financial rail rather than just a trading instrument. At the same time, there's still a big education gap in the market, especially around transparency, risk, and the misconception that on-chain activity is private, which of course it is not. Well, Carl De Jager, no stranger to the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, joins us now. He is founder and CEO of Silver Sixpence. Thanks for joining us again, Carl, and it's good to see you. Let's kick off. You are monitoring the transaction level in the crypto market in South Africa. You've now got quite a bit of data. What do you see? What does this data tell us?
Hi, Kieran. It's always a pleasure to be on your podcast. Thanks for having me back. So yeah, so we monitor, you know, data directly from full nodes. We're looking at on-chain data. We're also looking at public exchange data and that kind of stuff. And we're processing all of that for insights for regulators and for banks and auditors. And, you know, generally the traditional financial institutions, or that's where most of our clients actually come from. And what we're currently seeing, I mean, is that I think it's still the same trends as the last time I appeared on this podcast as well. Stablecoins is definitely the theme of the day. Stablecoins have surpassed Bitcoin in both on-chain activity as well as trading activity. There's a lot more demand these days for stablecoins, and we can go into why that might be the case. So Bitcoin, you know, having reached a peak in on-chain activity a year or two ago, is now dropping slightly. That can be attributed maybe to the pricing action that we've seen, and you know, the price drop since October last year. But I think it's also a good sign of utility and the market maturing in a big way. The regulations have been shaped by the Financial Action Task Force at Grey List of South Africa a couple of years ago, recently being removed from the grey list. But since that grey listing, we've seen a massive shift in the regulations regarding crypto assets in South Africa. And all of those regulations that have come into play, there's strong correlation between all of that and the activity that we're seeing on-chain as well as on the exchanges. So I can go a little bit into detail about those correlations if you'd like to.
Yeah, let's maybe come back to that. I want to just talk about some of the exchange activity. Are we seeing more compliance, and is it because there's pressure from the regulators and from the tax authorities? Because the tax authorities are dead keen to know exactly what is happening in people's crypto accounts and wallets.
The tax question, by the way, let's start with that one. That's a very, very sensitive topic, obviously. First of all, the tax legislation, the rules regarding crypto assets hasn't always been clear. And only very recently, there's been some clearer guidance from SARS, and that's mainly attributed to SARS adopting the crypto asset reporting framework, or the CAF. Now, the CAF is a framework that involves around about 40 countries. It's called the OECD countries, and they're all working together on a single framework to enhance visibility across the world in crypto transactions specifically. Now, the SARS, our deputy commissioner, chairs this committee, the Crypto Asset Reporting Framework Committee. And one thing that I can tell you is that they do have deep visibility into your exchange statements and cross-border activity and on-chain activity and all of that kind of stuff. So all I can actually just say is you need to be compliant. One thing about SARS as well is that they would typically enforce rules historically. So even in 2019, 2020, 2021, you know, when the rules weren't that clear, SARS would still go back now and enforce a lot of these rules now on those time periods. So if there is a VDP, a voluntary discretionary period, I think, or something like that, you know, you should make use of that and comply to your historic transactional records. Just don't be under the impression that SARS could not see into that and that you might have gotten away with undeclared gains and that kind of stuff. So that's one thing. Regarding the maturity of the regulations in South Africa, as I've said, we've seen a big shift, you know, so post the grey listing and that kind of thing. So all of the crypto asset service providers in South Africa are now licensed through the FSCA, and there's 400 odd of them out there in South Africa. And now there's actual clear rules and guidance as to how they are allowed to operate, what kind of disclaimers they are allowed to do, how they should treat incoming deposits and outgoing money, and the know your transaction and KYC and all of that compliance that needs to happen. So yes, the entire landscape has definitely changed from more of a wild west, or you know, anyone can do it, anything, to a much more structured product. We've seen things like, and we're all feeling that, by the way, in the user experience. You know, when you log into Luno or Valor nowadays, well, first of all, the KYC process, that we've kind of gotten used to. But new things are popping up, like, for instance, the travel rule implementation, where every time you want to withdraw Bitcoin, you know, you are asked detailed questions about where you are withdrawing to, who the resultant wallet, the recipient belongs to, and that kind of thing.
Okay. Do we have any better idea on which are the big exchanges that do most of the transactions? I would imagine it's pretty much Valor and Luno, but tell us what you're seeing there.
Yeah, so it's the landscape's completely dominated by Luno and Valor. They're making up 99% plus of the total volume. Actually, now I have to include one, maybe a couple more there that might be worth looking into, and that is OVIX and Altcoin Trader. But apart from those, the rest of the 400 costs that's registered aren't recording any significant volume. We are monitoring Chainex and Cape Crypto and Zago and a whole lot of others as well. And we're monitoring their on-chain activity as well as trading activity and so on. But it is vastly dominated by Luna and Valor. And even though it is dominated by Luna and Valor, we also have to look at the significant decline in trading volume on these exchanges over the last few years. So Luna and Valor, they used to trade 1,000 Bitcoin a day. On an average day, they would trade 1,000 Bitcoin. That has since dropped, since around 2002 or thereabout, that has dropped to about 50 Bitcoin per day currently. So that's a 95% decline in volume. Now, that, first of all, is a little bit sad. I don't like seeing such a big decline in volume. I mean, this industry used to be booming and it used to be extremely exciting and so on. I'm not saying it is not anymore. But I'm saying that, you know, the sentiment, at least if you look at that kind of data, has definitely subsided a little bit and declined. And so it's not the best thing in the world to see. And I'm wondering why. And if that is attributed to regulations, then I think we need to ask ourselves some very hard questions. It's like, does the regulations, first of all, achieve its mandate in protecting consumers? If it does, then that's great. If it does not achieve its mandate, but we're still seeing a decline in volume, is that decline in volume because of these stringent regulations? And if that is the case, then we also have to, I think, reflect a little bit. Aren't we stifling the industry? And from my point of view, I think, obviously, you know, being an on-chain and data expert, analytics expert, I am very much lobbying for the regulator to have tons and tons of data and monitor this industry so that they can be comfortable. Because if you have enough data, it's like a plumber having lots and lots and lots of different tools. You know, nothing scares you anymore because you have so many tools. You have a hammer and you have a saw and you have, anything that you can think of. And when you have all of those tools, you don't have to be scared and you can be transparent and the entire industry knows exactly where they stand with the regulator. And you can allow for a booming industry and you can give them lots and lots of freedom to innovate because you have the necessary tools to monitor and enforce if they do break those rules, right? So I'm hoping that we are moving into that direction and that the decline in volumes and activity that we're seeing is not a result of overregulation.
That's very interesting. 95% drop in trading volumes over a period of 4 years. But has that not been replaced to some extent by stable coins? And I might suggest another reason for that. Are we not seeing people who have previously purchased Bitcoin just holding on? Or are you saying that the number of new entrants to the market who were buying Bitcoin, that has dropped?
Yeah, it's definitely new entrants. And we're seeing that in the premium. So the thing is that the Bitcoin premium has declined from an average of 4 or 5% not that long ago, to 0% now, which means that there is more than enough supply now to satisfy the demand. And at volumes that we're currently seeing now, that basically means that the denominator, the demand is very, very low. So that's an easy calculation to do. On the question of whether stable coins are replacing Bitcoin volume, yes, to an extent that is true, but only on Valor and only on USDT, very interestingly enough, right? So USDC, not such a big demand in that, and also not the other exchanges. So I do think that Valor it attracts a very niche type of customer, a customer that is looking for very high volumes of USDT. And then, you know, they also have some very good market makers on their platforms that is able to supply and create a very efficient order book for the USDT pair. So that's fascinating to see. And yes, that we're talking hundreds of billions of rands of USDT trading volume still on Valor per annum. So it is significant, and it's good to see. And if you look at, you know, where this comes from and where it goes, you know, so it's a good mix between all of that stuff. So yeah, that does, in my mind, point to more utility than speculation. Of course, no one wants to speculate with USDT. It's nothing in that, right? But in terms of utility, USDT has massive utility, whether that's for payments or cross-border remittances or some sort of rail or interesting programmable financial transactions with DeFi and so on. You know, USDT has huge amounts of use cases, or actually any stable coins. Then I think also very interestingly enough is the tokenized stock. Maybe we're going to talk a little bit about that still, but the tokenized stock, the equity products that Luna and Valor is launching is, I think, something to keep an eye on. It's very, very interesting in development.
All right. I've spoken to you previously about the arbitrage trade in South Africa. This is where people would be buying Bitcoin or USDT Tether abroad and then selling it at a profit in South Africa. That's virtually disappeared. And there's been a lot of theories as to why that has been the case. But I think you've just touched there on the premium disappearing. And it seems to be you've really hit the nail on the head there. There's just less demand for crypto in South Africa.
Yeah, that's correct. So you know, with a 95% or whatever decline in volume over the last few years in Bitcoin, the demand is just not able to keep that premium up. So if you think about the historically what created the premium, it's the fact that there were massive demand for Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies in South Africa. And because of exchange controls, it was difficult to satisfy that demand. There was obviously a barrier. The resistance of to get money out was much more than the resistance of actually buying the Bitcoin, right? So there was a supply and demand mismatch, and that created the premium. And back in the day, it was very high. It was 6%, and that's like a risk-free type of return. Anyone could make use of their SDA or an FIA and basically just send money abroad, get Bitcoin, come back and sell it almost atomically, so almost at the same time, and therefore reduce any type of volatility risks. So it was a fantastic machine for any South African to make a few rands in income per annum. But now that has completely disappeared. I think on the one side, there's now a lot of these arbitrage companies, and some of them was closed recently because of the premium that's disappeared. But there's a lot of these institutional players that enables the arbitrage trade. And then on the other side is there's just not enough demand anymore in South Africa to buy up this Bitcoin that's coming in. So like I say, I hope we can only speculate why that's the case. I mean, I speculate myself. I have a few reasons why I think it might be, but you know, that's, like I said, it's only limited to speculation. But the reality is that, unfortunately, there's not a lot of demand. And I'm hoping that with these new, maybe we can also speak a little bit about the banks and what they are doing. You know, I think there's huge, huge innovation in traditional financial institutions in this industry. And hopefully that innovation can lead to an uptick in demand again, so we can see demand back to the days where it was in circa 2019, 2022.
Okay, talk about that. We do see the banks entering into the stablecoin space and the wallet space. They are recognizing digital assets as the future. Why is that, and what is this innovation that really excites you?
Yeah, so we're seeing massive innovation in all of the banks, all of the big South African banks. I don't want to call their names, but the red ones and the green ones and the blue ones and all of the banks, you know, are innovating heavily in the crypto asset space, and building all kinds of interesting products, whether that's brokerage products or insurance products or institutional custody products or stable coins. And I really want to shine the spotlight on stable coins, because stable coins is a big theme. And we've seen the lags on a global scale of Circle and USDC and Tether and USDT really having massive success. Like, you know, some of the biggest companies in the world are attributed to stable coins, and it supports the US dollar to a big extent. So it's just a game changer in every sense of the word. And we're seeing that innovation now spilling over to South Africa, and some big players on the side innovating heavily on that, and the banks getting in various stages, whether it's just issuing or custodian of the asset side, the money market accounts and the T-bills and that kind of stuff. And so we're seeing them innovate across the border, or just on the user experience side, so actually building out the applications, the wallet technology and so on. So that's really fascinating to see in the background. And some of them have launched already. I mean, there's a few public announcements about these stable coins. And then, so 2026 has been so far the year of stable coins, and I expect this trend to only increase for the rest of this year. And then I'd like to predict that 2027 will be the year of asset tokenization. So we'll see the same kind of innovation and the same kind of launches and so on that we've seen in 2026 so far, from banks, from large institutions like insurance providers and money managers. We'll see in the asset tokenization space next year. I do think that timing is of the essence. So all of these large institutional players that's innovating in this space, if you are too early, unfortunately, you're not going to make it. And we've seen that already with some of the asset tokenization guys that's launched products. If the market aren't ready and you cannot survive until the market is ready, then unfortunately, you know, you're going to burn your way through your runway, and unfortunately, you're not going to make it. We've seen lots of precedent regarding that. So it's like timing is everything in this market. Now is the time for stable coins. Next year will be the time for asset tokenization. So take that and fold it into your roadmap. You can quote me on that if you'd like. But yeah, timing is everything. And I think brokerage has had its day, right? So brokerage, if you talk about the exchanges and kind of thing, the Luna and Valor, I think it's had its day. There's plenty of liquidity now and plenty of brokerage platforms and so on. So that has come and passed. So I think these things coming, these stages or waves, you know, brokerage being one of them. Custody, I don't think it's worth innovating in that at all, in my opinion. Like, you know, there's no business case in that. So if you want to innovate in stablecoins now and innovate in asset tokenization.
Bold prediction. We'll definitely talk more about that as the months unfold. We've got to wrap up, but final question I wanted to ask you. It's about Eskom. Now, we've spoken before about this, and why is Eskom burning all of that electricity in the middle of the day, or generating that electricity in the middle of the day, and not making Bitcoin with it? Is this about to change?
Oh, yeah. There's definitely some information in the public domain regarding that. Of course, I'm a co-founder of a company that presented this to Eskom. And Eskom has bought in big time. So, you know, so there's definitely a partnership brewing in the background. And we'll see some launches in the coming months regarding that and some big announcements. But yeah, so Eskom has finally come around to the party. You know, originally I wrote a blog post about Eskom and Bitcoin mining back in 2018. So what, it's 8 years now? 8 years is a long time. But you know, a lot can happen in 8 years, and I have to say a lot has happened. So finally, there's some real stuff happening, and we'll see them getting into the Bitcoin mining space soon. I think it's extremely exciting. Of course, Bitcoin mining brings so many benefits to the likes of electricity utilities like Eskom. It stabilizes the grid because of the ability for a Bitcoin mine to fluctuate its demand profile extremely fine increments. You know, so it's this huge power consumer that is able to reduce its power consumption from many hundreds of megawatts to zero, and then increase that in like a matter of milliseconds or seconds. That's a type of demand response that has never been available through a national electricity grid. And if you couple that with AI, we all know is extremely hungry for electrons. Power availability is the biggest bottleneck for the AI revolution. But the problem is the power profile of an AI data center or hyperscaler that is extremely bad for the grid. It's extremely erratic, it's heavy, you cannot really disrupt it, etc. So what we are innovating on is coupling that profile with Bitcoin mining to produce a very stable profile, and that has extremely well defined demand response capabilities for an electricity grid operator like Eskom. So watch this space. Kieran, we'll come back, myself with Stafford Macy. We'll come back to your podcast in a couple of months and we'll expand more on that.
So you're going to hear it first here on the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast about Eskom getting into Bitcoin mining. We're going to leave it there. Carl de Jager, as always, what a pleasure. Thanks very much for joining us, Carl.
Thank you, Kieran. Always a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, hosted by Kieran Ryan. To listen to our other podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za or the MoneyWeb app and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.